We left off in Genesis 37 there, and we finished with verse 36. Now the Midianites had sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, and the captain of the guard. And certainly, if you flip the page and go to chapter 39, it would make more sense if we went there, in a way, and hopefully it'll make more sense why maybe the Lord put this in the middle of these two chapters. But it would seem like from 37 we would go to 39 because we would continue in, and we'll continue obviously looking at the slavery that Joseph experienced. Of course, it wasn't because he was unrighteous. It was because of his righteousness that he experienced it. Just as the Lord experienced death on the cross, not because of his unrighteousness, but because of our unrighteousness, and because of his righteousness that he died and was persecuted for us. But it would make sense to go to chapter 37. But interesting enough, if you think about why and how did Joseph get into this predicament? How did he get sold to the Midianites? We could look back in that chapter there of 37 to verse 26, and it says, as they were deciding what to do, remember there was a plot that was set out by his brothers to kill him. Not real good brothers, huh? Not a real good family cohesion there, it doesn't seem. But as they were debating this, Judah came up with a wonderful idea. It says, so Judah said to his brothers, "What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. And let not our hand be upon him. For he is our brother and our flesh." What an honorable thing that he would state such a thing. He's our brother and he's our flesh. Why should we kill him? See, that wasn't the concern of Judah. Judah was concerned with profitability. Why do we do things? Why do we do what we do? Right? It's profitability. Often. It's often why do we commit a crime? Why do we rob banks, right? It's because we want more money for ourselves. It's not for the others. It's not the Robin Hood adventure, right? It's self-seeking, and certainly, you know, Judah's no hero here. He's suggesting something that seems maybe better than killing him, but sin, right? If I kill somebody, that's a sin for sure, right? If I lie, that's a sin. And on God's judgment seat, he's going to judge the same. So it doesn't matter what sin it is. It matters that it's sin. And so, don't we do that sometimes? Don't we kind of, you know, maybe make it sound good, make our story sound good? I'm doing this because I'm trying to be kind. But we have some false motive. We have some reason why. You know, maybe, you know, honey, I do this sometimes. Hey, honey, do you need anything at the store? Need some milk? Need some bread? I'll go get it for you. She looks at me and goes, wow, what a wonderful husband, right? So I get in the car and I go to Wegmans. I get the Wegmans. I do get the milk. And I get the bread, but I can't help myself. I'm already there. I mean, come on. How about a coffee? Maybe how about some ice cream? Right? So you do that, right? There's some self-motivational things there that you just, boy, it's hard to do. And we do that with sin. That's, I don't think ice cream qualifies as sin, but maybe it does. It doesn't if it's heavenly hash. No, I'm just kidding. So here he is, right? And it says his brothers listened. Then the Midianite traders passed by So the brothers pulled Joseph out and lifted him out of the pits and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. And I think the Lord now takes a pause in Joseph's life, and he wants us to understand what kind of fellow this is that we've got here in Judah. I think he wants us to pause a bit. Remember, from slavery to when Jacob would come back into Egypt is 22 years from what during this time. So in a sense, as we go through and we see Judah having children, and obviously they grow up into maturity and they marry here, we see the elapse of time. So the Lord is showing us what happens. You know, he's kind of drawing it out and he's saying, what happens, you know, in a life that is like Judah's? There's some consequences. Right? There's some consequences. But the marvelous thing is God shows us himself through the fault of Judah. He shows us one of his essence, and that is grace. Right? It's a wonderful thing. We can't help but think of, hey, you know, when we studied Matthew, right? Do you remember Matthew? And we went through the genealogy and we touched upon Judah a little bit. But Judah was part of that. Wait a minute. Where was Joseph? I thought Joseph was the righteous one. Doesn't Jesus come through Joseph? No, he picked. Don't ask me why, because see, this wouldn't be my plan, because I'm not as gracious as the Lord for sure. But he picks Judah. He picks stumbling, bumbling Judah, you know? It's just the way he does it. And we see other people in the genealogy too that we can certainly wonder and scratch our heads why. But what a demonstration of God's wonderful, wonderful grace that he would show here. God always has a plan. And I think it's twofold here. I think one thing is he's going to show us the true colors of Judah. It's not the kindness that he has towards his brother, towards his own, one that was of his own blood, own flesh. But he's going to show us the true Judah. You know, and he's going to show us his grace, how wonderful he is. Nobody's outside the range of the stretched hand of God's grace, right? Nobody is. He's a wonderful God. So we pick up here in verse 1, and it came to pass that time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Dolomite, whose name was Hurah. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua. And he married her and went into her. So she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again and bore a son and called his name Shelah. He was at Shezeb when she bore them. You know, it's interesting here because, first of all, we have a few things happening just within the context of these first few verses. One is that Judah sees the daughter of a Canaanite. And I always say to guys, I go, you know what, when you're heading down a road, and I try to remind myself of this too, is that you're heading down a road, one of the enemy's tactics for men is that he will try to sway you away from the one that you're bones of one bone to, right? Other women, right? Other females that are walking aside the road. It's one thing if you see a female as you're driving, and you glance up and you see her, and you look away. The first look, you can't really help, right? It's just one of those things. You're paying attention to the road, and she happens to be there. But the second look is your choice. You have to look away. It's important. And here, Judah saw the daughter of a certain Canaanite. And I got to believe that he didn't look away. That he kept focused on what he shouldn't have had. And took what he shouldn't have had. You know? And if we go back into Genesis, in chapter 24, we see that Abraham, when he instructs his servant, remember? When he instructed his servant to go out and find that wife for Isaac, what did he instruct him to do? Go find a wife for Isaac, but watch out, right? Watch out that you don't pick up a Canaanite woman. Why? There was a problem with the Canaanites. They worshipped other gods. Remember Solomon? Remember Solomon and how he got tied up spiritually? He had all the wisdom. He had all the wonderful wisdom and understanding of God, yet he got tied up because his eye, what his eye saw, was more appealing than what his heart knew. Right? He knew wisdom. He understood it. But his eye overruled what his heart knew. And again, it got him in a lot of trouble. 700 wives, it's a lot of trouble right there. Sometimes one is a lot of trouble, right? Bob? Your wife is two down from you, man. You better be careful. My wife's in the nursery. I'm safe for a moment until... until Bob tells her. Go down together, brother. No, but I think he, you know, here Judah saw the Canaanite woman and it was appealing to him. And of course, we see Esau in chapter 28, we saw Esau take daughters of the Canaanites. And it says there that he did it because it displeased his father. Well, we're not into displeasing our father, right? We want to please him. We want to be a God pleaser. Certainly do. And so I see here, you know, how he in a sense begins, maybe unknowingly, maybe, you know, he wasn't in the Word the way he should have been, you know. Maybe when we do these things, I think when we wander astray, we got to think, where's our relationship with the Lord? When we start looking at things that we shouldn't be looking at, and I'm not just talking men here either, right? When we've got our eyes focused on something that we shouldn't have our focus on, we got to question ourselves and say, why, Lord, am I falling away from you? Am I not spending enough time with you? My eyes aren't focused quite the way they used to be. And I think we got to question that. It's good to question that. And we shouldn't be afraid to admit some of those things, right? That we've strayed away. Right? Even as a pastor, right? We can get so wrapped up in doing this and doing that. And we can, even though they're good things, we can get our eyes off the Lord as well. And there's no harm in taking a time out, you know, for us to take a time out for a week or so. It was well needed from a work standpoint, from a church standpoint, just from getting with the Lord and allowing Him to speak to me again, you know. I mean, not that He has stopped, but there were some things that hindered Him. It comes down to self, you know. It always seems to come down to self, doesn't it? So as we see this perhaps innocent step of Judah toward the daughter of a certain Canaanite, we see him starting to defile his relationship really with the Lord more than with his family name or himself. And then we see, and then she conceives, of course, and then Onan, and then Shelah. And we see in Onan and Shelah, they become Canaanite names. And see how it goes. It seems like you get one foot in the door, and now you got two in the door. And what you didn't never intended for this to be. You never intended to have this be in this situation, but now you have 2 feet in the door and you don't want them there. Not necessarily. But you start to draw away from the Lord. You know what happens? I'm not the only one that's ever drawn away from the Lord, right? Where you've drawn away from the Lord and your sensitivity is down. You don't catch on as quick. You start to, why turn the channel? I turn the channel. It ain't no big deal. It's only on for a few seconds. It's only a website. Why? It's only a website. What's it going to do? It can't come out and bite me. It's just pictures. And they start drawing you away, not just from your mate, but from the Lord. Our main concern here is that our relationship with the Lord is solid, right? Solid. Are you talking to Him? Are you meeting with Him? Are you spending time with Him? Because if you are, see, these things are going to be diffused. Because now we've got ears to listen and eyes to see, and the Lord's going to give us vision of those things and that sin in our lives. Don't you want that? I wake up every morning and I say, Lord, I just want to know You better. I don't know Him. I don't know Him as much as I need to know Him. I need to know Him better. I need to sit at His feet better. I need to sit at His feet quietly. I got to shut the yapper sometimes and just sit at His feet. Don't yap. Don't tell Him all the problems of the world. Don't discuss with Him the political scene in Syria. Lord, what are You going to do over there? Do you know how bad it is? And He's saying, Fred, do you know how bad it is? Do you know how much I want you closer to Me? But how it sneaks in and how it suddenly, here's Judah. He makes a comment about his brother and now he accepts the Canaanite ways in a sense and even adopts their names and for his children. And his children are no longer really of the line of Abraham, even though their blood was that. Now they have become integrated with the Canaanite people that worship other gods. And it's starting to wear and it's starting to be apparent. It says, then Judah took a wife for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. Sometimes when we look at this, we say, well, he was wicked. We were wicked. The things that Judah was doing was wicked. But for whatever reason, we don't really get that well defined here for us, but for whatever reason, he kills That's how. That's how bad sin is. We don't think of it that way. But Romans is pretty clear, isn't it? The wages of sin is death, right? And for us spiritually, we want to clean the house. We want to get right with the Lord. We want to get rid of the sin. We want to clean the leaven out of the house, right? We want to do the Passover every day in our lives. Get rid of that sin. So then Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and marry her and raise up an heir to your brother. But Onan knew that the heir would not be his, and it came to pass that he went in to his brother's wife, that he admitted on the ground, lest he should give her heir to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord. Therefore he killed him also. That is, in my side note here, it says, was evil. It was evil in the sight of the Lord. Why was it evil? Well, see, first Judah was trying to profit through his brother's slavery, in a sense. Then he defiles himself through the Canaanite, joining with the Canaanites. Then he adopts the Canaanite beliefs. Subtly, they sneak in. And now the consequence. The consequence of the sin was death. Selfishness. There was selfishness here. Said it was evil in the eyes of the Lord. Now we look upon this, and maybe we look upon it and say, well, that's kind of weird. I wouldn't want to marry my brother's wife either. Right? And of course, we know later on in Deuteronomy 25, verse 6 through 10, and we could go there, I guess. Chapter 25, verses 6 through 10. And it says in it, it shall be that the firstborn son which she bears will succeed to the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out in Israel. It was a way of continuing the name of the dead brother, the firstborn. But if the man does not want to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate to the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up a name to his brother in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak to him. But if he stands firm and says, I do not want to take her, then the brother's wife shall come to him in the presence of the elders, remove his sandal from his foot, spit in his face, and answer and say, so shall it be done to the man who will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel the house of him who had his sandal removed. Old spit in his face. So it was honorable, right? It was an honorable thing. It was supposed to be honorable. But then it was taken here as, that he didn't want to do it. Again, self-seeking dads produce self-seeking sons. Sin continues to roll down into the family line. And then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow in your father's house till my son Shelah has grown. For he said, lest he also die like his brothers. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. So there is a promise here made from Judah Judah would say, hey, you know, I will provide you with a husband. It'll be Shelah, but you, in a sense here, he was saying, you have my word on it. But in the same sense, you can see his fear. He's like, oh no, I might lose another son to this woman. What if he denies? What if he denies to do what is right? Maybe I'll lose him as well. So he promises her this. And it goes on in verse 12, now in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. And Judah was confronted and comforted and went up to his sheep shearers in Timnah. He and his friend Hura, the Adullamite. And it was told to Tamar, saying, look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. So she took off her widow's garments, covered herself with the veil, and wrapped herself and sat in an open place, which was a way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot because she had covered her face. Then he turned to her by the way and said, please let me come in to you. For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. So she said, what will you give me that you may come in to me? And he said, I will send you a young goat from the flock. It's interesting here that she would ask for such a thing. Perhaps it was out of not trusting him, you know, because he had pulled the wool, in a sense, over her eyes, not given Shelah to her. And so now she wanted something that would identify him with her. So she said, will you give me a pledge till you send it? Then he said, what pledge shall I give you? So she said, your signet or in cord and your staff that is in your hand. Then he gave them to her and went into her, and she conceived by him. So she arose and went away and laid aside her veil and put on the garments of her widowhood. So this signet was something that they used back then to prove purchase. Right? It was a way of identifying who bought what. It would be maybe, you know, I was trying to figure out what's kind of similar to this, and maybe it would be my driver's license. So I pull out my driver's license. My driver's license has my identification number on it, which is unique to me. So, and then it has my picture on it, which is pretty unique to me. Though Mark looks a lot like that picture. No, I'm just kidding. But it would be something like that, or a credit card. Social Security number, something of that sort that would positively identify me. Maybe it would be my fingerprint. You know, that would identify me. But a signet was that. It was that you've agreed to purchase this. It's stamped in wax, and it signifies that you are the one that purchased that item. So he was purchasing, certainly. Not what we would think that we should, you know, as we look at this and how badly, you know, in a sense, a woman was treated back then, right? You know, Pastor Chuck actually goes on and in his commentary in this Bible that he put out here, and he says this: the story of Tamar is a sad one, as we see how women were treated in that culture. It was not until Christianity that women were brought into the position of equality and recognized and honored as equal to men. You know, so many times have I gotten in debates with women about the word, because they don't see that. Because they look at it as, well, the man's got the higher position in the Bible. And that's true, because of how sin came about. He put him in charge of certain things. But it does not say that men are better than women. It does not say that we're smarter. It should say that we need him more. Right? That we should have a higher dependence on him. But so many men don't believe that. Right? They don't trust in him like women do. And so, I think the Bible positions women just right, because it's God's way. And of course, the world always tries to fend off what God has to say, the position in which the woman is placed in authority and so forth in the home and whatnot. But I think it's a beautiful combination, see, of the man and the woman and God's positioning of them and how He uses them together, right, to provide a peaceful home. I was talking to, I won't mention the name, somebody from church today, and just about peace in the home, you know. Some people live with no peace in their home. But we can be assured that God wants peace in our home. As His child, He wants peace in our home. For sure. So here Judah vows that he would keep this promise. And the price that would be paid, in a sense, here was for sin. It wasn't something that the Lord wanted here. Maybe Judas, after his wife's death, found himself in a desperate situation. You know, felt unloved or whatever the case may be, and was trying to find something to fulfill that void in his life. But see, the thing is, only God can fill that void of loneliness. The problem here, if we go back and we review what we just went through with Judah, is that he was on a decline. He was on a decline in his life from God. He had all the opportunities, right? He was in the right line. He was in the right position. He had the right father at the right time. He had all the good Bible teaching, but he didn't want to take opportunity. He didn't want to meet with the Lord. He didn't want to really learn of the Lord, you know. Instead, he went and he did his own whatever seasoned his eye, whatever seemed to delight him. He seemed to do. And we see in verse 20 here, and Judah sent the young goat by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot who was openly by the roadside?" And they said, "There was no harlot in this place." You can say this much with Judah, is that at least he attempted to make good on his vow this time. He put the effort in, right? He said what he was going to do. He said he was going to pay with the goat, and he was following through with that. The one thing that you don't see here is him doing it personally. So you see him, in a sense, sending somebody forward. It's kind of like us sitting in the pew and someone here giving an altar call and you saying, hey, this is what I've done. Can you go forward? Right? Instead of dealing with ourselves, you know. Instead of saying, I'm going to man up or I'm going to woman up to this and I'm going to go down and I'm going to pray and I'm going to get right with the Lord. Period. So look at this. It says in 22, it says, so he returned to Judah and said, I cannot find her. Also, the men of the place said, there was no harlot in this place. Then Judah said, let's forget about it. That's basically what he said. He says, well, let her take them for herself. Meaning, why don't you just, she'll come get them. Lest we be ashamed. So let's not poke the bushes anymore. Let's not bother with this anymore. We did our part. We tried to give her this thing, but let's not go any further because this might make us ashamed. You know, when we're not in the Lord's will, when we're not following the Lord, when we're not seeking the Lord diligently, it says. When we're not seeking Him diligently, there's a reason to be ashamed. Right? There's a reason to be ashamed. When we're not in the Word, when we're not diligently seeking Him in the Word, there's a good reason to be ashamed. Shame is good for us. Shame gets it all out on the table between us and the Lord. It's good. I've seen guys, man, I've seen guys that have fallen into sin and have to apologize before congregations. It's good for them. You know? It's good for them. It brings them back to reality of their self, of their sinful nature, and how much they need the Lord, how much they need to experience His grace. We should be ashamed. Sin always cares about how you look. It never cares about others. We have the biggest mass murdering going on in our country than ever, with abortions. Right? Over 50 million have been done since we've legalized abortion. It's a selfish act. Why do people have abortions? Well, a lot of times it's because, number one, I don't want to deal with it. Right? I'm going to college. This is going to wreck my life. Should have thought about that, buddy, earlier, right? So we deal with these things in an irrational way. But it shows us the heart of man. It's shameful. It should bother us. Sin should bother us. It shouldn't be something that we can forget about, that we can put behind us. Unless it's covered by the blood of Christ. It's not good enough to just go to church and think that somehow that's going to solve it. We've got to get upon our knees before the Lord and ask and plead for His forgiveness. He's already done it. It's almost like He's already paid the price. So why don't we accept it? You walked into somebody's house and they were going to throw away a brand new loaf of bread that's already paid for, would you say, why don't you give it to me? With Christ, it's already paid for. Why don't you give it to me, Lord? Why don't you cover? Why don't you wash away my sins, Lord? Then it continues here, and it says, it comes to pass about 3 months after that Judah was told, saying, Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot. Furthermore, she is with child by harlotry. So Judah said, bring her out and let her be burned. When she was brought out, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man to whom these belong, I am with child. And she said, please determine those. These are the signet, the cord, and staff. You know, he was all ready to throw her under the bus, wasn't he? He was all ready to say, well, let's burn her at the stake. Until he saw the signet. And you know, Tamar here calls him on it and says, hey, who does this belong to, buddy? You know, who are these? And of course he would say that she has been more righteous than I, because I did not give her to Shelah, my husband, or my son. And he never knew her again. But what craziness, right? Yeah, he confessed it. Yeah, he fessed up to it. But it was right down to the nth hour, right? She had to confront him with it. I guess for us, are we willing to wait until somebody calls us on our sin? Or are we ready? Are we ready to say, Lord, this is my sin. Lord, I just want to deal with it, Lord. This is my sin. I had a good friend that was caught doing something at work he shouldn't have been doing. The Lord was gracious and merciful. He almost lost his job over it. But he didn't. But it took to the nth to bring him. It almost ruined his marriage. Sin's powerful. It's deadly. It's not something we should fool with. It's not something that we want to play around with. And you know, Scripture is pretty clear, right? That sin is pleasurable for a season. That's all it is. It's a season. And sometimes, if you could say, maybe it would be as long as summer, or maybe it could be as long as fall, and maybe it would be worth it. But it's not even that long. The season's short. It's short-lived. It's nothing to be fooled with. It can ruin your life. I told you about our friend Glenn that died of years and years of use of cocaine. And he came to know the Lord. But as far as this life was concerned, he messed it up so bad that it was irreversible. Even after 10 years of him not doing drugs, he still had to reap the consequences in this life. He's eternally grateful now, of course, that he knows Christ and that he understood the salvation message and accepted it. But the consequences are real. His relationship with his family, I don't know, ever really recovered. They looked at him as a thief, because he was, right? But fortunately, our limitations don't limit the Lord. They don't distract his plan. They don't detour his appointed things, his appointed times, right? Like Pastor Bob says, you know, Syria,
He might turn it off. He might turn it on. We don't know, right? But all we're to do is to live in His peace, in His presence, right? To be so consumed. You want to be consumed with something? Be consumed with walking in His Spirit. That's what the Lord showed me this morning. Fred, I want you to walk in my Spirit. There's a lot of distractions. There's a lot of distractions within the church. There's a lot of distractions within our work. There's a lot of distractions within our home. God wants us to walk in His Spirit. And I'm convinced of that. But here he's finally confronted. I remember Karen being on, actually one of the, probably the last year or two that we were up there in Geneva, Karen got called to be a juror, you know. It was her turn. So she got there and she was, they released quite a few people, but she was one of the alternates, which means really you're on the jury, but you don't have any say-so. Unless one of the other jurors is removed. So then she sat there, she listened to the whole case, and it was a drunk driving case. It was a coach of a local high school that had had a DWI once before and was caught again. And his whole thing was, hey, you know what? It's not my fault. It's this cop's fault. He's got a grudge. We went to high school together. He's got a grudge for me. He's after me. It's his fault. He would never admit it. Right? This guy was in court and Karen goes, man, you know, I thought he was guilty, but it was tough. It was tough bringing the evidence together. You know, in her heart, she kind of knew that he was guilty, but they couldn't bring the evidence together. And so the very last day, the jury was probably going to release him. Because I just couldn't find enough. One of the last days, a lady had walked by the courtroom, and she was working there. She looked in the courtroom and she saw this guy. And she said to another lady, "Huh, I thought that would have been over days ago." Matter of fact, if you remember right, they had the lady that killed her boyfriend using antifreeze from. Do you remember that? The antifreeze, you know, that you pour into cars? She poured it into his martini, or his margarita, I guess it is. Gave it to him, and they called her the margarita killer or something like that. She had some name. That grand jury made a decision before Karen's small little jury made a decision on this case. That's how drawn out it was. Well, this lady walked by and said, "I thought this would be over by now." And the other lady said, "Well, why would you think that?" And she said, "Because I was out partying with him all night, going from bar to bar to bar to bar." He was convicted. The lawyers brought him up, gave him a little. In matter of fact, they came up to him and said, "Do you know this lady?" He said, "No, I don't." He said, "Do you know her husband?" "No, I don't." Says, "That's funny, you played all summer with this guy on your volleyball team and you don't know him." See how stupid we can get? We can get so blind to our sins, we think we can divert it. We think we can fool everybody. And we can sometimes. But we got to be careful. Because we don't fool him. He knows our heart, man. It tells us that he knows it better than we know it. That doesn't give you a heart attack, nothing will, right? It's tough. Anyways, let's finish up here. Now it came to pass at the time for giving birth that behold, twins were in the womb. And so it was when she was giving birth that the one put out his hand and the midwife took a scarlet thread and bound it on his hand, saying, "This one came out first, his hand, that his brother came out unexpectedly, and she said, "How did you break through? This breach be upon you." Therefore, his name was called Perez. Afterwards, his brother came out, who had the scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was called Zerah. And, you know, if you look up Perez, you know, you see him in the genealogy of Matthew. We see him there. We also see, you know, we also see Rahab, right? We see Tamar. We see, it's amazing, you know? It's really amazing who God used to bring about the Messiah. It blows our mind. You know, here's Perez. He comes out breached. That means he came out the wrong way. He didn't come out the way he should have came out. But you know, with God, we might come out, we might come about the wrong way. Right? Not according to the way the Lord had planned. Well, the Lord knew it all along, right? It's hard to get past that. But even then, you know, even then, here's Perez, it comes out the wrong way. God still uses the line of Judah to bring about the Messiah, the Christ. God still uses him. You know, and I think about, you know, the walk coming up for the walk of life, and I think a lot of those kids come about the wrong way. But God still has a plan. You realize that. Right? A lot of our stuff comes around, comes about the wrong way, right? We can testify to that. There's things that's happened in our lives that came about the wrong way, came out of order, whatever. But God still uses us. See how wonderful His grace is? It's amazing that He would have grace upon grace with Judah. And we would see that. Awesome. God is good.